TXFM presents. Album Anniversaries with Joe Donnelly.
This is Album Anniversaries on TXFM. It's Joe Donnelly here, and today I'm looking at an album that has been described as utterly of its time, but completely timeless as well. It's Different Class by Pulp. It was and is just that, an album that stands head and shoulders above its contemporaries and many, many albums of the 90s and even beyond. It was produced by a man who has worked with or produced the Beatles, Roxy Music, the Sex Pistols, In Excess, and countless others. He is Chris Thomas. Hello, Chris.
Hi there, Joe.
It's such a great album. It's one of my favourite albums of all the albums that celebrate an anniversary this year. I can remember exactly where I was when I bought it on CD. This was your first Pulp album.
Yes.
Can you describe the initial approach or meeting with the band? Because they'd been around for a little bit at that point.
Well, basically, I was approached by Rough Trade to produce a single, which they sent me a demo of Common People. And this was Christmas 94, and they were doing a kind of fan club gig. I think it was at Theatre Royal, Drury Lane. And I saw this gig, and it was really strange because obviously there was a show on at the time, and they had this sort of these steps. It was a little bit like, you know, the steps that Shirley Bassey, you know, like on the Morecambe Wise show when Shirley Bassey came down the steps there. Mm. It's left over from the show, and Jarvis utilized this prop to the point where virtually every song he just ran up to the top and then came down like he was making an entrance.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, this guy's a nut, and that's always a good sign.
Yeah.
So I was really quite intrigued by that. And also, I obviously liked the demo of Common People. So we went in and we recorded it. It took quite a long time. It took about a week or so like that because there was a lot of work that went into it. And of course, then the next thing that happened, well, that went well. We did a B-side for it, and we knocked that off in a day or two. So that went really well. So then they decided, you know, then it was like, oh, should we go ahead and continue recording some more stuff? So we did, and we did about five songs over the kind of Easter. I think we recorded Common People around about like February, March of that year. And then we went in and we recorded about five songs over Easter, of which I think Disco 2000 might have been in it, and a couple of other songs. But in actual fact, three of the five didn't make it onto the album. They came out as various B-sides and things like that.
I was just going to say, so Common People existed for a bit of time before Different Class was fully formed.
Oh, completely. I mean, we finished Common People with the B-side, so we knew that was coming out. You know, we were all happy with what we did, so we went in there to record some stuff to start an album. We recorded five songs, which it didn't sort of, we didn't have that same momentum at all. Three of those songs didn't even get on the album. They got released in various forms, but there wasn't really that same sort of buzz going on. But then the next thing that happened after that was that Common People got released and went bang, you know, and became this huge hit. I think it got to number two or something in England. And then, of course, then followed by Glastonbury.
Yes.
As a result of that, they did Glastonbury, which by pure fortune, they ended up, you know, because I think whoever...
Stone Roses.
Yeah, they pulled out.
That's right.
They ended up headlining it.
That's right.
I think it was during that... It was pretty much close after that that... I'm not sure which side of Glastonbury it was, but Jarvis managed to write something like seven songs or something. It might have even been nine, God knows, in some 48-hour blitz, which I thought was the most incredible achievement on the planet. And they brought me these songs into the studio. In fact, I listened to them upstairs. They played me these demos, and I remember scribbling down like my sort of one, you know, my sort of like my one thought for each song as it sort of hit me. And it was just, it's fantastic. And then we started, you know, we started working on those, and we just had suddenly the momentum really, really took off. A momentum that we didn't have in that Easter session at all. That was just grinding to nowhere.
Yeah. Can I ask you mentioned there you'd scribble down thoughts when you listen to demos. Can we, you know, to get into to your mind, so to speak, can you remember what kind of thoughts, or in general when you're working, what thoughts do you scribble down?
Well, when the when I heard something changed, I wrote down this. I mean, I'm telling you, I'm just answering the question. The only one I can remember is I remember that when I heard the demo of Something Changed, I wrote down Number 9 Dream. Oh, is that the title? I can't remember. You know, the John Lennon
John Lennon song. Song. Yeah.
Yeah. Was it Number 9 Dream? I can't remember anymore.
Yeah.
Something Dream.
It was, yeah.
Yeah, that was it. And it reminded me of that. There was something about it. Specifically, what was the line? There was a line, and I got Jarvis to repeat it, and he didn't like the idea at all. And it was a complete nick from the Lennon song.
Well, it's Where Would We Be Now? If we'd never met.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, which is,
and
which
I got him to repeat it, and he didn't like the idea at all. Mm. To me, that was the whole, that seemed to be that really sort of an apex in the point of the song. That just sort of held you there and then sort of pushed you. So I don't know where you get these ideas from, you know. If the light bulb comes on, you get these sort of ideas and, you know, then you go with it.
That's the 1% inspiration, as Thomas Edison said. Well, it's funny you mentioned Something Changed.
1% inspiration. What did Edison say?
What?
I don't know that.
It's 99% perspiration and 1% inspiration. So
I didn't know Edison said that. I heard it much later from a jazz player who said it was 10% inspiration and 90% perspiration.
Well, those jazz guys, they're a bit more laid back than Thomas Edison.
Exactly, obviously. I would actually go along with the 1%. I go along with Edison then.
Yeah. Something Changed. It's funny, that song, for me, it's one of the more sentimental songs, and it captures the theme or the manifesto throughout the album, which is this, you know, a certain age and a certain class and a certain time in England and a scene and a music scene. And were they aware?
No, but it was just a beautiful song. Mm. I mean, to me, I know I've been associated with records that sort of supposed to represent a time and all the rest of it, you know, but to me, that was the timeless one. And all great songs really are timeless in the end. You know, I mean, if you've got a great record, it might sort of indicate the time at the time. But in actual fact, the reason why it carries on now is not because it's resonant at the time. It's because it's a fantastic song in the first place. Do you get me?
Absolutely.
And I think that's just a very beautiful song.
So when you were in the studio, it sounds that you were buzzing away. There was great momentum. This is, you know, having already had the experience with Common People. So I was going to ask, was there a sense of pressure with the band or a sense of pressure with you that you had to deliver something in particular? But I guess not, if you're saying that you're at full speed.
Absolutely. The pressure's on you when it doesn't go well, like that Easter session. Once you get a momentum, and obviously I think the one thing that happened to Jarvis, probably subconsciously, was the success of Common People must have given him fantastic
confidence.
Sort of, you know, confidence, yeah. Exactly. You know, an understanding that, yeah, he, regardless, you know, he must have known all along that he wasn't bad, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But that really gave him some sort of, I'm on the right track here. And so that's why to write that amount of songs in that short time, and the songs of such quality, I mean, anybody can write 10 songs in like an afternoon, but are they good? I mean, all those songs went on the album. I mean, that's nuts to be able to write songs of that quality in such short a time. So, yeah, what happened was that there was no pressure on us. And to be honest, I mean, Rough Trade and Jeff Travis, they never put, it was just like, go away and make a record. You know, no pressure at all. In other words, rather than pressure, it's the opposite. It was support, because that's what you need. You don't need somebody like banging down your ears. I mean, I think half the thing that's wrong with the world now is you've got A&R men in there who really don't have much of a clue about anything. You know, banging away. I mean, they just don't know how it's done. You know,
So. The lyrical content, he's well known. I mean, this is one album that musically and lyrically is a kind of a juggernaut. Does that inform any decision making with you? Are you aware of it a lot, or what?
It informs images, which then get. It's sort of a backward process in a way, because like music is completely abstract, right? And whereas lyrics are much more concrete. For me, the concrete of the lyric then throws up an image that then throws it into the abstract of making music.
Mm. Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it's really funny, because I remember saying to Jarvis one day, I don't know why, I just said, look, I said, it's not lyrics that sell, you know, that make great records, it's the music. Because in the end, it sort of is in a way, because otherwise you wouldn't have a record in sort of a foreign tongue being a huge hit. Do you know what I mean?
It's true.
But nevertheless, those lyrics were just fantastic. I mean, the whole thing, it really was like a film. I mean, the lyrics were so vivid.
I'm going to get back to that, but we've been chatting so much, I haven't asked you to pick a song yet. Let's take one of the songs from Different Class. What would you like to hear, Chris?
The two dark ones, really. Mm. The two darkest ones were Feeling Called Love and I Spy.
We'll take I Spy.
Okay.
This is I Spy from Pulp. It's TXFM.
I spy a boy who change your world.
It's TXFM. That was Pulp with I Spy. This is another edition of Album Anniversaries with Joe Donnelly, and I'm talking to the producer of Different Class. It is Chris Thomas. Chris, you mentioned, we spoke about the lyrics a few minutes ago. One of my favourite songs is Sorted for Ease and Whiz, because it's it just describes a scene that so many people will connect with, and it's done so well, and there's a sense of worry and fear at the end, and it just captures it. It's just so well written. But I'd love to ask about production-wise, the crowd sound effects add so much to it. Was that an idea in a flash of inspiration, or what?
I think that was possibly Jarvis's idea. I think one of the things that was interesting about that song is we actually recorded it live. I realised, because Jarvis was playing the acoustic guitar to it, there's no way that you could plant a vocal on top of the acoustic guitar track, because he sang it while he was playing it. So that was actually cut live.
Wow.
And then we added things, bits and pieces. But I think that's why it really, really worked. It was a complete take of a vocal and guitar without... I mean, most of the time, I mean, you edit a vocal to, you know, into syllable, you know, syllables. But that was absolutely a live performance, that song.
Oh, it's incredible. It's incredible. In terms of other tracks and the way they're sequenced on the album, was that something that you had to thrash out with the band, or was there a plan in place?
Generally speaking, when I make an album, or when I've made albums, I've always been the one to sort of thrash out that, to actually work out what that sequence is going to be. Because I think it's really a very, very important part of making an album. It's obviously, this is with Shuffle and all the rest of it, this sort of thing's sort of gone out of the door nowadays.
Mm.
But I used to really, I mean, I used to agonize over the right sequencing for an album. I found it just such an essential thing, because you almost impart a sort of narrative that was never there in the first place onto the record. And I really, really had trouble on this album, because it was a long album. It's a long album. And you just sort of, it wears out in a way. And I found it very difficult when I was taking stuff home to even get a couple of songs that glued together. So I was really, really stuck. And I asked the tape up on the Pete Lewis to make up a cassette for me to listen to. Don't put any of the songs that we've put together so far in that, because I haven't heard anything that works yet. Nothing. He made that sequence up that you hear on the record, and I saw it and I looked at it when when it came in the post, because I said send it down or whatever, I got it picked up from the studio. I looked at it, I thought, oh shit, that's not going to be much help. It's going to be less than no help.
Yeah.
And I put it on and I just went like, wow, it was there. And he did it.
It's incredible.
Pete Lewis did that, and it was just absolutely there. And it's like, well, how did you do that? And it was just so I sort of split it in, because it was so long, I split it into sort of like three thirds instead of two halves.
Yeah.
You know, and it absolutely worked. So
one more song.
Can't thank you enough for digging me out of that one.
Yeah, absolutely. One more song, Disco 2000. The start of Disco 2000 will forever, on any radio station of any genre, when you hear that, there's something about it. I mean, was that, do you go, guys, this is the way we have, this song is going to work if we do it like this? Does that just happen because, you know, like we mentioned earlier in this interview, you were all buzzing, momentum was there, or did it require a little bit of extra finesse?
You take, basically, you take each song as it comes. You know, some things need work on, you know, some things don't. I mean, it's not as defined as that. You know, it's really impossible. Sometimes, if I've worked on a song, I mean, like the intro is the thing that you've really, you know, you really pay attention to. Sometimes it just comes straight out of the blocks. There are too many sort of bits and pieces there that you can manipulate. I mean, Disco 2000 was pretty much as they did it. I think that was in those Easter, but that was one of the ones out of the Easter sessions. Mm. That was the one that survived.
Yeah.
But that was just pretty much as they did it.
It must have been great for you to work with a band that were so on top of their game.
Well, yeah, I mean, but so the big thrill for me is like when that massive, fantastic songs came in, it was just like, you know, it's like the big waves come on now, you know, it's coming. We ain't going to fall off this. We're going to definitely surf this right to the end.
You've worked, I mentioned at the very start, some of the acts you've worked with. Different class, where do you rank it? Where do you put it on your shelf? Does it go on the top shelf? How do you feel about it?
Yeah, I mean, it's a little bit hard to sort of, you know,
choose
and to sort of judge them and sort of, you know, it was just, I'm just very fortunate that I worked on another great record.
That's a lovely way to put it. That's a lovely and a great tribute to the band Pulp. Would you like to pick a song to close out?
Feeling Called Love, if that's not too, I don't know if it's up or down, that song.
That's quite all right. It doesn't matter. It's from Different Class. That's the most important thing. Chris Thomas, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. Thank you so much for taking the call.
Okay, it's a pleasure.
TXFM presents Album Anniversaries with Joe Donnelly.